Hi, this is Richard Parker with BeomoInsiders.com. Today we're going to discuss how to find and buy the right business for you. This is undoubtedly the single most important aspect of the entire business buying process. Here's a few things we're going to cover today. How to quickly hone into the type of business you were born to run so you can wake up every day with the excitement and enthusiasm that only comes from doing something that you truly love to do for a living. You'll learn a simple five-step exercise that will establish your golden rules for determining whether or not a particular business is right for you. We'll cover the single biggest mistake people make when trying to figure out what business is right for them. And I'm going to tell you a story of why I paid $100,000 for an underperforming, upside-down company that everyone said was going bust and somehow turned it into a massively profitable $4.5 million business within 5 years. And of course, there's much, much more. Today's conversation is going to make the difference between you buying a business and buying a job. Over the past 18 years, we've received a lot of questions on the subject, and today I'll teach you everything I can in the time we have together. As you listen to this CD, there are five specific things I want you to keep in mind. First, there's lots of good businesses run by the wrong people. Have you ever seen a business where they make money in spite of themselves? I come across them all the time. You know, the ones with poor customer service or archaic policies, for example. You know, there's a Shell station near my house that's always busy because the location is great. And I've only been inside a couple of times, and I completely avoid buying anything there unless it's absolutely necessary because it's such an unpleasant experience. The convenience store is rarely busy, and so I look at that business and think how much more volume their mini mart could do if it was really clean, if there was an aroma of fresh coffee instead of 12-year-old mystery meat spinning on the rotisserie, and if the staff had even 1 ounce of a personality. With the right owner, they could leverage their traffic into a ton of new business. Second, buying a business is not like real estate where time heals all errors. When you buy a business, if you buy the wrong one, in 12 months, you're going to be bankrupt. Third, very few people know early on with absolute certainty what business is right for them. And so if you're in that situation, don't worry. We're going to clear up those muddy waters today. Fourth, if you wait for the right time to go into business, you never will. This is especially true during periodic economic downturns. Look, there's always going to be up and downs to the economy. That's something that we can't control. If you look over the cycle of any type of business cycle, there's going to be good times and bad times, but they're typically temporary. You also have to shut off the naysayers. These are friends and the doom and gloom media outlets who are predicting terrible situations every day, or friends or people that you come across that tell you, you know, you shouldn't be going into a business for 100 different reasons, because the only reason they're counseling you that way is because they don't have the guts to do it themselves. Now, obviously, you can't be reckless. There's certain sectors that maybe experience downturns at certain times with no upside in sight, and so you have to stay away from those, obviously. And lastly, you do not have to choose a business in an industry where you have vast knowledge. Your skills are infinitely more important than your experience. In these monthly sessions, I usually interview an outside expert, but today's going to be different. When it comes to determining what's the right business for you, only you can make that determination with absolute certainty. But don't worry, I'm going to help you big time. I've worked one-on-one with hundreds of people in the last 18 years. Today, I'm going to share with you the most important issues on this subject. I'm also going to address the most common question we receive from clients. So listen up, because I talk fast and we're going to cover a lot. At the end, you'll know precisely how to nail down the most important part of this whole business buying process. Now, I trust you've completed the exercise in Section 3 of our course, but if you haven't, that's the first thing you must do after today's session. Now, let me start out with a great story. In 1990, I had just acquired my first business, and it was probably several months later that I was looking at an opportunity of a company that I knew would fit perfectly with the business that I had already started. And the business that I was looking to acquire was in terrible disarray. In fact, they were going backwards. I had someone else look at the business with me. They told me they'll be bankrupt in 6 months. The only thing is, I knew that they were absolutely perfect, that that company was a perfect complement to the company that I already owned. And even though the owner of that company was out of his mind, he was impossible to deal with, he had a completely overinflated value of what his company is worth, I knew that it would dovetail perfectly with my existing business because it would allow me to expand my company geographically in one fell swoop. The guy wanted $100,000 for the company, which was probably 10 times more than it was worth, And even though I didn't have the money, I somehow managed to beg, borrow, and steal to be able to pay him what he wanted. I managed to do so. And the result is, less than 5 years later, that company turned from a $100,000 purchase into a company that was started to do over $4.5 million at enormous margins and massive profits. And the lesson here is real simple. The business was perfect for me. I knew it. I couldn't listen to what anybody else was telling me. Maybe I was a little hard-headed, but I knew categorically that that business was perfect for me. And so it's a prime example. If you get into the right business, there's no telling what the wind-up could be for you and the results that you'll be able to achieve. Now, there's a number of overused and misunderstood sound bites that confuses buyers. And while you'll probably think I'm crazy when I first tell you these, I want you to stick with me on this, okay? You've no doubt heard the expression that you have to do what you love to be successful, or versions of that concept. Well, it's true, but nearly everyone interprets it the wrong way. You know, you can't know if you're going to love a business until you own and run it for a while. It's not the business that's going to bring you joy, but rather what it is that you do every day in the business that's crucial. Now, this is not about turning a hobby you love into a business, and many people incorrectly make that assumption, that if you do something you love and you can convert that to a business, that you're ultimately going to be successful, and that's absolutely not the case. As a matter of fact, most people that turn a hobby into a business end up actually hating the hobby. And let me give you an example of this. If you love puppies, and you decide that you want to buy a puppy store, and parallel to that, you have an opportunity to buy a nuts and bolts store. Well, you love puppies, but if after 3 months or 6 months you can't make a living and the business is going bankrupt, not necessarily going to learn to hate puppies, but you're going to learn to like them a whole lot less. On the other hand, if you have a company that sells nuts and bolts and there's nothing exciting about the product, but you're doing something every day, that you're building a business, you're enjoying the people that you're working with, you're making more money than you've ever made before, then you could rest assured you're going to like nuts and bolts a heck of a lot more than you're going to like puppies. And the other point is, when you look at any business, you can't know if you'll love it. So you have to ask yourself instead, can I see myself running this business and enjoying it? The second most misunderstood statement about business success is having to be passionate about the business. Passion is going to come as you get involved with the business and start running it and see that your hard work is finally paying dividends versus all the years that you worked for someone else and you weren't properly rewarded for your time, or you didn't enjoy what you were doing, or you didn't get a pat on the back, or you didn't get any satisfaction from the job that you did, or you didn't look forward to getting up in the morning and doing your work. That's what's going to deliver the passion. The passion is going to come over time. It's not something that you're going to say from the beginning, oh, I could see myself being passionate about this business. Because just remember the puppies and the bolts. You could be passionate about the puppies, but if the puppies don't make you any money, you're going to learn to not enjoy the puppies very quickly rather than loving the bolts. Okay, let's move on. The single biggest mistake people make when trying to determine what business is right for them is how they conduct a self-analysis. They either over or underestimate their strengths and weaknesses. Figuring out the right business is so simple, so don't complicate it. The right business for you is one that will grow from your strengths and not suffer from your weaknesses. All you have to do is match your greatest skill set to a business that relies on that skill to be successful. And that's it. It's pretty simple, isn't it? Don't worry. If it doesn't make sense to you right now, it will shortly. You know, I've worked with some incredibly successful people in my career, including several billionaires, and I've learned that they all share three common traits. First, good business people know their strengths, but great business people know their weaknesses. Second, the most successful people in the world are smart enough to know that they don't know it all. They hire experts, they get informed, they do their homework. And third, they're persistent, incredibly so. They simply don't give up. Let's get right into the self-assessment part. Here's a three-step exercise that you must do, and write this stuff down. Step one. You need to truthfully identify all your strengths. Then write down a specific real life and personal example of that asset. For example, if you note one strength as being, I'm good at dealing with difficult people, then your example may be, our company had a very large but difficult client. I was the only one he'd deal with because I was able to ask him questions very early on and identify his needs. Now, next to each strength, write down the type or types of businesses you believe would benefit from each one of those strengths. To continue the same example, someone who is good with people can translate that into a business that works with the public. Retail, for example. So that's step one. your strengths. For step two, you'll address your weaknesses. Write down each one and then state what you've done specifically to overcome that issue. And it's okay to say I've done nothing. The goal here is to identify on paper what you are really, really good at and exactly what you're no good at doing. Now let's identify some businesses you must avoid. For example, if you said one of your weaknesses was organizational skills, then businesses which require a high degree of integrated systems or logistics don't make sense for you. For example, moving and storage companies or businesses that are project-oriented. Step three, and this is the one that I hope will make you uncomfortable, because I want you to take what you've just written down in step one and step two and have an objective third party look at your answers. And this could be a spouse, it could be a partner, it could be a business associate, it could be a former boss, a friend, but someone, again, who's honest enough that's going to tell you what you need to hear, not necessarily what you want to hear. You see, what happens in step one and step two, we have a tendency as human beings to either be too easy or too harsh on ourselves. And regardless of whether or not you're one category or the other, by having an objective third party look at your answers, they're going to bring you into compliance, as I like to say. And if you're too hard on yourself, they're going to perhaps tell you some examples that they've experienced with you personally that's going to make you realize that maybe you are too hard on yourself. Similarly, if you're too easy on yourself, they're going to be honest enough with you to tell you, hey, listen, you're not really good at that. You may think you are, but you're not really. And so here's my take on that. Okay, so once you get, you've got to do step one, evaluating your strengths, step two, evaluating your weaknesses, and step three, having an objective third party look at your comments. One thing I also want to cover is the actual running of a business, since it's a big concern, but I promise it's way easier than you think. There's only a few true skills that are required to run a business successfully, depending upon the type. It can either be sales, marketing, operations, administration, logistics, or customer service, just to name a few. Now, there are only four umbrella categories of businesses. You have retail, manufacturing, wholesale distribution, or service businesses. So here are some of the skills that it takes to be successful in each. In retail, these are attributes that you'd want to have to successfully operate a retail store. You want to work with the public, or you enjoy working with the public. You're comfortable in a business where people come to you versus having to go out and get them. You're good at managing and hiring people. You have an eye for product and you have the ability to jump on new trends, and you're not worried about long hours. In manufacturing, you need experience, and this is probably one of the four umbrella categories where you really need industry experience to be successful. In addition to that, you're good at analysis, you're willing to make long-term investments and decisions, for example, buying state-of-the-art but super expensive equipment that is going to benefit the business long-term. You have access to additional capital, and you're good with employees. When you get into the third umbrella category of wholesale and distribution businesses, you need a sales-driven mentality. And the reason why I say that, in a wholesale or distribution business, you have your suppliers on one side and you have your customers on the other. You really don't own anything. You're really stuck in the middle. You're trying to make everybody happy. Sell enough to please your suppliers and keep your customers happy with the right product. So you have to be someone who, you know, can see the gray area a little bit and can also be comfortable being somewhat stuck in the middle. Other attributes for a wholesale distribution business, good negotiating skills, an eye for product, and someone who can really see the lifetime value of a customer. In service businesses, I'm going to outline a number of attributes, but as you know, service is a huge category, so this will give you a bit of a starting off point. To be successful in a service business, you're okay not having tangible assets in a business, unlike a manufacturing business, for example. You're good conceptually, you've got good self-initiative, good follow-up skills, you like working with few employees, and you're enthusiastic. The reason why I say enthusiasm is very important is often service businesses, in talking with the other attributes that we mentioned, have fewer employees, they may not have an office structure, you may even be working it from your home. So you have to remain and be able to maintain that level of enthusiasm. We're now going to discuss the most important exercise you can perform to be sure you buy the right business, and it's called the five golden rules. These are the rules that will ultimately serve as the foundation for whether or not you buy the right or wrong business. You need to get your rules committed to paper before you start wildly looking at opportunities. You must visit businesses and analyze them to properly compile your list. Now let me share with you my list. And you may have read this in the course, but it'll give you a very good idea and reference point to help you compile your own. Any business that I consider purchasing must meet the following five golden rules. It must be sales and marketing driven. It must have high margins. There must be an element of exclusivity, either in the product or the territory. There must be demand in place, and it doesn't compete on price. I also have a sixth and seventh, but they're not critical. I like to see, if possible, businesses that may have a recurring revenue model and one with few employees. But again, those are my sixth and seventh, and I can easily overlook those two. But the first five absolutely must be in place. There's no swaying on those five. I will never, ever even consider buying a business that does not have those five attributes. Now, let me tell you why my list works for me. First of all, my skills are clearly sales and marketing. So obviously, I want to have a business that's sales and marketing driven. I like a business that has high margins because if I know that my skills lie in sales and marketing, I'm not so worried about the current revenues of the company as long as they're high margins because, again, my skills come in sales and marketing. I feel confident that I'm going to be able to build the sales of that company. So as long as there's high margins, the profits are surely going to follow. Plus, high margins allow me to make a couple of mistakes without putting myself out of business. I like an element of exclusivity because I like to sell something different than what everybody else has. And I like that to be the point of difference that I like to have either in the product or the territory where I'm covering. The fourth point is I like to have a business where there's demand in place. I can assure you that it's way too expensive to create demand. And it's actually probably one of the biggest misconceptions that people have who start businesses versus buying an existing business. It's funny on that topic, you know, 96% of all startups fail in the first 5 years. And that's probably a big reason why, in addition to lack of capital, is they think they're going to get into business and create demand for their product. And it's way too expensive to create demand. Lastly, I don't want a business that competes on price. To me, that's simply a business model that's not sustainable. So that's my list. Now, it'll give you an idea, but you have to understand my list is my list. It works for me because of my strengths and my weaknesses. You must make your list specific to use. You know, I will be honored if you copy mine, but don't use it because it's not going to work for you. So here's how to make your list, and I want you to write this down. There are 10 steps, so I will talk slowly, but be sure to listen to this again. Number one, make a preliminary list immediately after you listen to the CD of your golden rules and be specific. Now, I understand that you don't know all your rules today, but I at least want you to take the time and write down what you think today are your five golden rules. And again, be specific. Don't say, I want to enjoy my work. Of course you want to enjoy your work, but instead you want to identify what it's going to take for you to enjoy it. And that becomes your golden rule, such as, I want to offer a product or service that will make a difference in people's lives. That's a golden rule. Number two, identify 3 to 5 categories of business types that you think at this point may be right for you. Number three, I want you to eliminate the ones you don't want. For example, if you know that you're not interested in buying a gas station, a convenience store, a hair salon, or a restaurant, you're going to be able to immediately eliminate 60% of all the business types that are listed for sale. Number four, I want you to use the recommended websites in the course to view listings and speak to and visit at least 3 to 4 businesses in each category in the next 30 to 45 days. Number five, you'll then have 10 to 15 opportunities to evaluate. Number six, after each visit, I want you to do 2 things. First, double check your list to see if it meets your 5 rules. And second, ask yourself if there's anything you learned at that meeting or speaking to that seller that you want to incorporate into your list. But remember, if you add one, another must be dropped. Number seven, I want you to rank each business according to your list. Number eight, you should focus your attention on the top 5 that you've just ranked. Number nine, eliminate any categories you determine you don't want, and you should be able to toss at least 2 of the 5 categories. And number 10, you should be refining your search to the remaining categories, seeking out additional ones for sale, and continuing to pursue the 5 businesses that remain on your list. Now, I promise you, if you follow these 10 steps, you will accomplish the following 4 things. Number one, you'll be able to quickly identify what sectors are right for you. Remember we talked about sectors of retail, wholesale distribution, etc. Sectors within those categories of businesses that are specific to the ones that may be right for you. Number two, you'll rule out what types don't make sense. Number three, you'll hone right into key issues with any business you will evaluate going forward. And number four, you'll have a handful of meaningful businesses to pursue right now. At this point, I want to talk to you a bit about how the right business will become your platform to achieving great wealth. You know, I've been very lucky, and I've enjoyed some great personal and financial success from owning several companies. And my formula is really simple. Here's how I did it at the beginning and still do. Number one, I make sure that I'm buying a good business. And to me, a good business is a good, solid, stable business. I like businesses that fly under the radar. I like bland, boring, unsexy businesses, but I like good businesses. Number two, I want to get that business onto rock solid footing. So even though I'm buying a good business, I don't look to buy turnarounds. I want to make sure that I get it onto rock solid footing, and that's including the policies, the procedures, and everything in place. And number three, I leverage its cash flow to buy others. It's really simple. That's it. That's all. Now, on the subject of owning multiple companies, let's discuss someone else who's had just a wee bit of success in business, and that's Warren Buffett. And of course, I say that tongue in cheek. I can assure you that even on a smaller scale, you can easily duplicate what he's done. Here's his four-step guide to building great wealth. Step one, turn off the stock market. And by that he means is you can't pay attention to the minute-by-minute activity of the stock market. You have to look at it from a longer-term perspective. Do you remember when we talked early on when I said there's five things that I want you to keep in mind? And one of the things that I asked you is to understand that there's always going to be ups and downs. Okay, well, that's one of the things that he references to as well, which is you can't look at this on a minute-by-minute basis. Number two in Warren Buffett's four-step guide to building great wealth is don't worry about the economy. Now, he obviously does not mean that you shouldn't pay attention to periodic issues within the economy, but the economy is much more of an umbrella. It's a macro situation. On your level, you've got to pay less attention and not worry about the economy, only because you're going to look at this from a long-term perspective. And again, that fits very well to what we talked about earlier that you have to keep in mind. Again, there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be certain times where people say there's inflation or there's a recession looming, or now's a very good time and the economy is in a real growth mode. That's all great, but that's much more on a grander scale, and you can't pay attention to those whims or short-term whims. Number three talks about buy a business, not a stock. You have to look at what you're acquiring. You're not looking to just, when he buys a stock or particular equity, for example, he's looking at the company. He doesn't want to just look at the performance of the stock. He wants to look at the core value of a company and what it does at its very core. And is that a sustainable model? And that's what you want to look at as well, of course. You want to look at the core of the business. And is it something that you can sustain after you take it over and grow? In other words, is this a business that a good business? Because again, that's number one of my rules, buy a good business. Is this a good business that I can make great as the new owner? And number four in Warren Buffett's four-step guide to building great wealth is manage a portfolio of business. And I think you could even use me as a perfect example. You know, my simple three-step rules have worked over and over and over again. And if you are able to use and leverage your good existing businesses, get them onto rock-solid footing, and then leverage their cash flow to buy others, you're going to be able to build and manage a portfolio of businesses. And in no time, you're going to have multiple streams of income and be making more money than you ever dreamed possible. Now, I want to talk to you about some of the additional questions that we've received in a recent survey that we conducted. And so for privacy, I'm not going to disclose the sender's name, but these are some very interesting questions. Question number one, my biggest concern would be choosing a business most likely to immediately produce significant profits and consistently increase in value. Well, they're focusing on something that it's not even reality. Because while they're focusing on having a business, which of course you want to have one that immediately produces profits and can consistently increase in value, it's not up to the business to do that. It's up to the individuals to do that. And it's up to the individuals to be able to identify the fact that it's a business that's going to fit with their strengths and not suffer from their weaknesses and be able to be sustained and grow under their ownership. Again, if you buy, there's lots of good businesses out there, but there's lots of good businesses. A good business with the wrong owner is going to quickly turn sour. So it's important, of course, when you're evaluating business, and we're going to talk about this in upcoming sessions, but how you value business and things that you need to look for during due diligence. But the issue here is the sustainability of a business that you buy under your ownership. The next two questions are really interesting because they demonstrate how one person can be completely delusional and another quite logical. Here's the first question, for example, and they ask, should I buy a business even if I don't know anything about how to run it? When I got this question, I actually had to shake my head and sort of, I mean, that to me is like asking, should I buy a plane even though I don't know how to fly it? Or, you know, if your daughter comes to you and says to you, should I marry this man even though I can't stand him? Realistically, should I buy a business even if I don't know anything about how to run it? No, the answer is no. Of course you shouldn't buy that business. It concerns me that someone would even have that thought process. But yet here's the second question, which comes from a completely different perspective, one, you know, that's just straight logical. What are my chances of success to get into a business in a completely new industry, even though I am definitely comfortable handling the duties that the current owner does? Well, ladies and gentlemen, this person just hit the nail straight on the head, because that's what we've been talking about. Here's someone who understands the fact that, you know what, it doesn't matter. You can get into a new industry. Your skill set is infinitely more important than the industry. And this is someone who's going to succeed because they recognize the fact of and have been able to identify what it is that drives that business and the skill sets that are required. They ask a very logical question. Hey, I have the skill set, but I'm not sure that I don't know the industry. You know what? Unless it's overly complicated, you can always learn a new industry. You can't always learn a new skill set. And you certainly don't want to be learning a new skill set while your investment and future is at stake. Here's another question. Will I be able to afford a business that yields enough income to satisfy my lifestyle, considering the effort I would have to put in? I already put in 55 to 60 hours, sometimes more. Can I do that and live like I'm living now? Well, let me tell you something real clearly. If you're putting in 55 to 60 hours in your own business, you're going to live a heck of a lot better than you are working for someone else. Now, there's no secret that when you own a business, you're going to have to work hard. But 55 to 65 hours, I mean, if you're doing that working for someone else, personally, I think you need to have your head examined. But on the flip side of that is you could rest assured that if you're willing to work that hard in your own business, unless you do something crazy or buy the wrong business, you better believe it, you're going to be successful. And the last question we have here is, my concern is determining what kind of business to buy. I'm interested in a retail business, and my husband is interested in a restaurant. He's trying to talk me into a restaurant, which is just not good if I'm not interested. I had to laugh. You better believe it. It's not good if you're not interested. And here again, you can't let someone push you into something that either you're not going to enjoy, you're not going to enjoy running, or you're not going to be successful at doing because you lack your skill set. If your husband is interested in buying a restaurant, then let him buy a restaurant and run it. Okay, it's interesting because 90% of all restaurants fail within a year after they're sold to someone else. So if your husband is that interested in getting into a business that has that high degree of failure, he's obviously someone who really doesn't pay, I don't mean disrespect him, but he's obviously someone who doesn't pay much attention to someone's wants or needs because he's trying to push you into something that you're not interested in doing and probably not even going to be good at doing. So let him buy the restaurant and you get into something that you're going to be more interested and successful at doing that you could match your skill set to. Now, in our regular sessions, I always put the guest on the hot seat and ask them four compelling questions. Since we get great feedback about this segment, I'm actually going to put myself on the hot seat today. I'll ask each question and then provide my answer. But before doing so, let me tell you what's coming up in next month's CD. We're going to discuss how to finance the purchase of a business, and you're going to learn how to easily get the money you need, how to prepare to meet lenders, you're going to learn some super creative ways to structure financing deals, when and how to put performance deals in place to drastically reduce your exposure and to be sure the business is successful after you buy it, and how to get any seller to be your banks. And folks, 91% of our clients negotiate seller financing with these strategies, so rest assured these are some powerful techniques that you're going to learn. Okay, it's time to put myself on the hot seat. Here's question number one. What are the simplest and most powerful bits of information about buying the right business that I've ever learned, period? Well, that's easy. Number one, take a very honest self-inventory, and we discussed exactly how to do that, looking at your strengths and looking at your weaknesses. Number two, don't try to find the perfect business, because the perfect business doesn't exist. Every business is going to have blemishes. Every business is going to have some minor problems. It's going to have warts. The perfect business doesn't exist. However, you obviously want to find a business that makes the right sense, that's the right business for you and makes perfect sense for you. But again, the perfect business, if you're going to look for that, you're going to keep looking to perpetuity and you're never going to buy. Question number two. If our listeners walked away with only what I'm going to say right now about buying the right business and they absolutely have to be successful, what would I tell them? Well, that's simple. Whatever it is that you do best has to be the single most important driving factor of the revenue and profits of any business you consider purchasing. And let me repeat that again, because it ties in so brilliantly to your skill set. Whatever it is that you do best has to be the single most important driving factor of the revenue and profits of any business you consider purchasing. Question number three, what are two of the biggest mistakes people make when they are trying to determine what business is right for them and what should they do about it? Number one, they either overestimate their strengths or downplay their weaknesses. Buying a business is not like getting a job where you may embellish your resume a bit and then be adequately trained on the company's nickel. You have a lot more at stake than that. It's now your dime, not their nickel. When you buy a business, you need to be perfectly suited to run it. And number two, they focus on the profit and not the product. Remember the puppies and the bolt stories? And of course the product is important, but you take profit to the bank. You don't take product to the bank. And I see it all the time where people go and meet with sellers where they're looking at a business and they get all delusional about all the wonderful things that they're going to do with this company and all the great things about this product and so on and so forth. And they forget that the profit is what pays the mortgage. Question number four, what is the single biggest thing that I've ever learned that has helped me as a person to become successful in life? Well, that's easy. My whole life, both professional and personal, came into perfect focus once I came to grips with being able to take absolute and complete responsibility for my success and for my failures. Once I realized that my success is up to me and my failures are because of me, everything changed. Life got into focus for me. It changed the way I looked at every aspect of life, and I literally catapulted from earning a good living to making tons of money and having a blast in my personal relationships. So in a nutshell, it's up to you. Remember, nobody cares as much about you as you do. It's useless to have what I call a lottery or get-rich-quick mentality. That's not a strategy. In fact, if you buy lotto tickets, stop buying them. It's terrible for your mental health. Instead, put an action plan together and follow one that will make you successful instead of hallucinating that success will fall into your lap, because it won't. There are plenty of people that can and want to help you. Just ask them. But ultimately, if you want to meet the person who can really make you successful, just look in the mirror. Well, that's it for today's session. Remember to do your assignments. Your strengths and weaknesses exercise, complete your five golden rules, visit with sellers, and hone your list. Well, I really enjoyed our time together, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.